Well, spring, I am told, has arrived. That's what the calendar says. The last 2 days certainly didn't feel that way, but I'm sure it will be here before long nonetheless, probably right after the holy days. Usually that's when things warm up. This morning I'd like to review the sequence of the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread with you. We've looked at this a number of times, and the chart that I handed to you, you've seen before, but I always get questions on this, so I thought as we approach Passover, it would be good to review it. We'll focus on the sequence of events that led up to the Passover, both in the Old and the New Testament. So I've got a boatload of scriptures for you. So if you can kind of get prepared for that, and we'll just go through them. But let's pick up the story back in Exodus chapter 11. Exodus chapter 11. And I think the reason I've had a few phone calls this week from people asking different questions, and I think the reason that questions are asked about the sequence has to do with the plethora of opinions that are out there with respect to Passover. That's not a new phenomenon. In fact, when Jesus Christ kept the Passover, and we'll go to those scriptures a little bit later, but just to kind of set the stage, he said very clearly that the disciples were to go and prepare the Passover for him. But the Pharisees and the Sadducees of his day kept the Passover the next day. There were, however, other Jews that were keeping it at the beginning of the 14s of the first month, even at that time. So when I say there are a plethora of opinions, I say that simply to illustrate that that phenomenon and the arguments over when to keep the Passover is not a new one. But I hope that looking at the scriptures that we're going to study this morning, you will see that when you look at all of the scriptures, it becomes very clear on what the Bible states on the topic. So we can have confidence that we are doing it the right way. Exodus chapter 11. We'll take a look at verse 1 and just kind of get the background here. Here we have the death of the firstborn announced. And the Lord said to Moses, I will bring yet one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt. Afterward, he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will surely drive you out of here altogether. So finally, at the culmination of the plagues, Moses receives the announcement from God that you're finally going to be let go. Verse 4. Then Moses said, thus says the Lord God, about midnight, I will go out into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on the throne, even to the firstborn of the maidservant who is behind the handmill, and all firstborn of the beasts. God is not a respecter of persons. And we see that here. Everybody, including the Pharaoh, would suffer the consequences of his rejection of God's instructions. Then there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as was not like it before, nor shall ever be like it again. Does that phrase ring familiar? You know, that's what we read just a couple of weeks ago, that Jesus Christ said that the coming great tribulation will be a time like there has never been one before, nor ever shall be. So that sets the stage here, and then we drop down to verse 12, chapter 12, rather, in verse 1 through 5, to get the Passover instructions. Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, "This month shall be your beginning of month, and it shall be the first month of the year to you. Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th day of this month, every man shall take for himself a lamb, according to the house of his father, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next to his house take it according to the number of persons, according to each man's need. He shall make your count for the lamb." Verse 5, "Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats." You know, generally we think of the Passover lamb as having been taken from the sheep. But you notice here that it could also have been a what we would call a kid of the goats. Now, continuing here in verse 6, "Now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight." So the question, the big question and the argument has been whether or not the evening of the 14th day here is the beginning of the 14th or the end of the 14th. And I think as we go through the scriptures this morning, it'll become evident that what the Israelites were instructed to do and what they then in fact did do, and it is recorded in the Bible, it is impossible to make that happen at the end of the 14th into the 15th, as some have suggested. It doesn't work. The time sequence for everything that occurred doesn't work, even if the scripture said that, and they don't. Continuing here in verse 6, "Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight, and they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts on the lintel of the house where they eat it. Then they shall eat the flesh on that night, roasted in fire, with unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Do not eat it raw, nor boiled at all with water, but roasted in fire, with its head, with its legs, and its entrails. You shall let none of it remain until morning. And what remains of it until morning you shall burn with fire. Thus you shall eat it with a belt on your waist, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. So you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover." And of course, the reason it's called Passover is they got passed over. The death angel passed over them, and they were spared. I mean, oftentimes when we get passed over for the promotion or passed over for something else, it is not considered a good thing. On this particular night, getting passed over was a very good thing. Verse 12, "For I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. Now the blood shall be a sign for you on the house where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and a plague shall not be on you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. So this day shall be to you a memorial, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance." There is a statement of permanence here, that the Passover is a feast that is to be kept throughout your generations for perpetuity. So now, let's notice here what we've learned. You know, we've learned a couple of things. You know, it was to be killed between the two evenings. And the word used in this verse that is translated twilight or at evening literally means between the two evenings. While there is some dispute in general, scholars accept that the literal and ancient meanings of this expression is the time between sunset and darkness. And that's coming from, and I have a copy of it with me here. We have a doctrinal study paper on this topic online. It's called The Passover of Exodus Chapter 12 that was published in 1999. And it goes through in detail all the different arguments and what they mean. But as I think this aptly describes, while there are many different opinions, scholars generally agree that this expression means the time between sunset and darkness, between the two evenings. And that makes sense. Now, for your reference, I'm going to go through a plethora of scriptures here that show that the Passover is on the 14th day. Exodus 12, chapter 6 says, keep it until the 14th day of the same month. Leviticus chapter 23, verse 5 says, on the 14th day of the first month at twilight. Numbers 9, chapter 3, on the 14th day of this month at twilight. Numbers chapter 9, verse 5, and they kept the Passover on the 14th day. Numbers chapter 9, verse 11, on the 14th day of the second month at twilight. You know, for those that couldn't take part in the Passover, the first one, the option was given to take a second Passover. God made that allowance. It's recorded in the scriptures. Numbers 28, verses 16 and 17, on the 14th day of the first month is, on the 14th day of the first month is the Passover. So, you know, you ask yourself, you know, when you start making an argument for a Passover on the 15th day of the month, you know, it gets a little bit tricky. I mean, it becomes complicated. Joshua chapter 5, verse 10 records that they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month. Second Chronicles, chapter 30, verse 15. The Passover lambs on the 14th day of the month. They killed the Passover past the 14th day of the month. And then in Chronicles, Second Chronicles, chapter 35, Passover lambs, again, on the 14th day of the first month. Ethra, 14th day of the first month. And Ezekiel records the same thing. Now let's go to Leviticus chapter 23. Let's turn to that because I think this kind of nails the question of a distinction between Passover and the first day of unleavened bread, because you have that argument as well. Well, Passover is at the beginning of the 15th or at the end of the 14th, and you get really theoretical and theological about the whole matter. And so Passover becomes and runs right into the first day of unleavened bread. But notice what Leviticus chapter 23 says in this regard. Verse 5, on the 14th day of the first month at twilight is the Lord's Passover. Verse 6, and on the 15th day of the same month is the feast of unleavened bread to the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. So here we see that in Leviticus chapter 23, that is the one chapter in the Bible that outlines all the biblical holy days, a distinction is made between a Passover on the 14th day of the month and the first day of unleavened bread occurring on the 15th. So that is an anchor scripture for this particular issue. And, you know, the notion of a 15th-day Passover is fairly prevalent out there. It is significant to note that this passage specifically delineates that the Passover is on the 14th day, Since the name Passover is derived from the fact that the death angel passed over those that had blood on the doorposts, it only makes sense that the passing over occurred on the 14th day as well. Which, when you start thinking about that, if, and I hope I'm going to try to be clear as I go from one side to the other, hopefully I'll be able to do that. If Passover had occurred at the end of the 14th day, as some argue, then the passing over at midnight that is recorded in the Bible would have occurred not on the 14th day, but rather on the 15th day. So, if Leviticus describes Passover as being on the 14th day, doesn't it make sense, I'm asking, that they would have been then passed over on that time period? Now, there are other arguments to make in favor of that, which we will get to in a minute, but I just wanted to kind of apply that logic, okay? Passover, as I mentioned earlier, is derived from the fact, and we read the scripture, that God, when he gets there, or Jesus Christ, the death angel, when he got there, the angel passed over them at midnight on the 14th day. Okay, let's go back to Exodus chapter 12 once again and take a little closer look at some of the things that are said here. And after having received the instruction from God in verse 21, we notice now what actually occurred. So, you know, we will see, I mean, the stakes were pretty high here. You know, they were either going to listen to what God said or suffer the consequences. So in verse 21, we see this. And Moses called for all the elders of Israel and said to them, so this goes back after he had received a message from the Lord. Pick out and take lambs for yourself according to your families and kill the Passover lamb. And you shall take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and strike the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood that is in the basin. And none of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning. Again, it's pretty clear, okay? Let's just kind of put ourselves in their shoes for that night. You know, this is new. I mean, we look back at this and we have the benefit of the historical perspective. But, you know, think about it. You're asked to kill a lamb, to catch the blood in the basin, and then put it on your doorpost, and the assertion is that that will save your family. What the Bible does not record is how many Israelites there were that did not follow the instruction. I don't know. There may have been some. But it was certainly an unusual request, I think we could all agree. But notice here the instruction of not going out until morning, for the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians. And when he sees the blood on the lintel and the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and not allow the destroyer to come into your house to strike you. And you shall observe this thing as an ordinance for you and your sons forever. And it will come to pass when you come into the land which the Lord will give you, just as he promised, that you shall keep this service, and it shall be when your children say to you, what do you mean by this service? That you shall say, it is the Passover sacrifice of the Lord, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians and delivered our houses, so the people bowed their heads and worshipped. Then the children of Israel went away and did so, just as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron, so they did. What did they do? They sacrificed the lamb. What did they do? They took the blood and put it on the doorpost and the lintel. At midnight, the death angel came through and passed over them. And they were to wait until morning before they left the house. That's an important fact. Again, if you argue from the 15th Passover perspective, you've got a whole bunch of problems with sequence. You don't have enough time to, how do you stay in your house until morning and go out of Egypt by night? You see, here's the problem, and it's part of a larger problem. When you start saying the Bible does not mean what it says, and you start having opinions and you try to make it say something that it does not, it becomes a bigger and bigger problem. And yet, if you allow the Bible to say what it says, and you follow that bit by bit, here a little, there a little, as the prophet said, it all provides a solid and logical framework that is understandable. Verse 29, and it came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of livestock. He killed them at midnight. Verse 30. So Pharaoh rose in the night, he, all his servants, and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. So after midnight, after Pharaoh had found his firstborn son, his heir to the throne, dead. So, you start from midnight, 1 o'clock, time passes. Verse 31. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, rise and go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said. Also take your flocks and your herds, as you have said, and be gone. Get out. Oh, and bless me also. It was a different kind of Pharaoh. So sometime during the night, while it was still night, Pharaoh called for Moses. In fact, there is no record of Moses going to see him. In fact, Moses told Pharaoh in Exodus chapter 11, verse 29, that I will see your face no more. Won't see your face again. All right, now let's think about what's occurring. Moses kept the Passover, right? So he also was under the command to not leave his house until morning. Hence, as it says here, he called for Moses and Aaron by night. He sent a messenger there, or went there by himself, whatever the case might be. The Bible does not say. But there still is amazing precision in the documentation here of the events that occurred. Better than modern day reporting, I might add. I've This is a bracket. But, you know, we read the newspapers and the news media and think, oh, okay, you know, the New York Times said, or the budget of Sugar Creek said, and we tend to believe it and take it as authoritative until you read something, while I'm on picking on the budget, until you read an article about yourself in the budget, and you say, I said that? The reality is that the reporting often, whether intentionally or unintentionally, is not very accurate. Here we see a lot of details that are recorded, and we're looking at it thousands of years later. I mean, we're talking about time of a day in the middle of the night. So Pharaoh calls for Moses and Aaron, and this would all take a considerable amount of time. Because from where Pharaoh's throne was to go, the land of Goshen was a considerable distance, and if my memory serves me correctly, I think it was a distance of about 40 miles. Don't quote me on that. That may or may not be accurate, but it was some distance. Okay, we think of 40 miles a big deal. Well, let me tell you, 40 miles is a big deal when you're running a horse and chariot. I mean, you're not going to get there in an hour like we do right now on the country roads. So I'm, you know, we're building this, you know, just looking at the logic, events that occurred that night took time. Okay, so the morning breaks on the morning of the 14th, they had to burn the remainder of the meal. Verse 35, they had to do their spoiling. Now, the children of Israel had done according to the word of the Moses, that they had asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians so that they granted them what they requested. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. They finally got, this was called payday, after hundreds of years of slavery. Chapter 13, verse 19, records them taking the bones of Joseph, as he had put the children of Israel under solemn oath, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here with you. Then if we look in, let's jump over to Numbers chapter 33. Numbers chapter 33. Verse 1. These are the journeys of the children of Israel, who went out of the land of Egypt by their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron. Verse 3. They departed from Ramses in the first month, on the 15th day of the first month, on the day after the Passover. The children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of all the Egyptians. What's unclear about that? It says it here in as many words. They went out from Ramses. They went out of Egypt on the 15th day of the first month, on the day after the Passover. verse 3. I've read verse 3. Continuing verse 4. For the Egyptians were burying all their firstborn, whom the Lord had killed among them. Also on their gods the Lord had executed judgments. Then the children of Israel moved from Ramses and camped in Succoth. Now, there was a bit of a logistical problem. When you start thinking about moving that many people, we're talking about a lot of people. And you don't have cell phones. You don't have all the equipment that we have today. You don't have motorcycles to be running back and forth to, you know, organize people, and loudspeakers to, you know, do crowd control. Imagine this. Okay, just think about it. We've got, what, roughly 45,000 Amish in the Holmes, Tuscarawas County area. Let's say for whatever reason, the Amish need to evacuate and march to the next town. We're only talking 45,000 people, not 3 million. Think about how long that would take, you know, raising horses and buggies around, letting everybody else know to get ready to move out. You don't do that. You don't do that between midnight and morning, like the proponents of the 15th day Passover suggest. It's just not possible. And neither is that what the Bible says. Reading from our Passover paper, according to the U.S. Army's Quartermaster General, a group of this size, 2.5 to 3 million people, to camp would require an area roughly 750 square miles. If the Israelites were all living in the same area of Goshen when the Exodus occurred, there was still a considerable distance to travel. When spreading the word to leave, it would seem impossible to gather people from an area so large, 750 square miles. Now, that's a big area. And do so in the darkness over a period of 2 or 3 hours. Even if people were prepared to leave, this would still seem impossible to accomplish in the suggested time frame after midnight, but before dawn on the 15th. The scriptures tell us that every Egyptian household had at least one dead. A conservative estimate would place the dead firstborn between 1 and 1.2 million. You talk about a tragedy of epic proportions. All because a stubborn leader would not acquiesce to God's will. With over a million dead and hundreds of thousands of dead animals, it seems highly unlikely that the Egyptians could have thrust the Israelites out in the middle of the same night when that tragedy occurred. They were burying their dead as Israel prepared to leave. Who buries their dead after midnight and before sunrise? One should also consider the elaborate burial rituals that existed in Egypt during this time period. Is it possible, all this could be done in the hours after midnight and prior to sunrise? So that just highlights, you know, some of the issues that are associated with trying to cram everything into one night. It just doesn't work. So let's look at the night to be much observed. Exodus chapter 12, verse 37. Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot, besides children. A mixed multitude went up with them also, and flocks and herds, a great deal of livestock. And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were driven out of Egypt and could not wait, nor had they prepared provisions for themselves. Now the sojourn of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt was 430 years, and it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, on that very same day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. On the very day. God is able to execute His will with precision. It is a night of solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations. So that's what we celebrate on what we, according to the Bible, call the night to be much observed. And notice that it is a day later, because they came, they had this night that they were celebrating is the celebration of leaving Egypt, of going out with a high hand, after the Passover, after having been freed. Deuteronomy chapter 16. Verse 1. Observe the months of Abib, and keep the Passover to the Lord your God. For in the months of Abib, the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night. So we see two things referred to in one verse. The keeping of the Passover, and the fact that the Exodus occurred at night. So you observe the Passover at the beginning of the 14th. The death angel passes over the Israelites at midnight on the 14th. They stay in their homes all the way until morning as commanded by God. And then they get ready and stage to leave Egypt by night at the end of the 14th and into the 15th day. So the first day of unleavened bread becomes a celebration. Number one, of the night to be much observed, celebrating leaving Egypt with a high hand during the nighttime portion, and the holy day celebrating that event on the following day. It all works very well logistically that way. If you try to have Passover between sundown and sunset, or sunset and dark, at the very whimsical end of the 14th, and then try to make everything else fit into the same night, it just doesn't work. I mean, how can you go leave Egypt in the night when you were commanded by God to stay in your homes until morning? And I know, I mean, I've read the arguments, I've been there, I've had to answer the questions and deal with the issues. I know there are very smart peoples with PhDs behind their names that will argue that morning doesn't mean morning, and that midnight means this, and, you know, you get it all jumbled up. I just have not found God's word to be that complicated. It gets complicated when we don't want to believe it. You know, most of the, I mean, it was there, the Ten Commandments. And it's not 17,000 pages of regulations like the type of thing that they create in Washington today. It's the Ten Commandments. A kid, a child can understand them. A preschool child can understand the Ten Commandments. So it's clear. The Bible is clear. It becomes complicated when we try to say that adultery is no longer adultery. It's an affair. Okay? You come up with new labels. That's when life gets complicated. Same is true here. Let's go to Exodus chapter 12. Exodus chapter 12. Again. And notice the days of unleavened bread. Exodus chapter 12, verse 15. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh, that person shall be cut off from Israel. That's strong language. They will be cut off. And that language remains in effect today. You have the same kind of language with respect to the Day of Atonement. He who does not fast, who does not afflict his soul, will be cut off from the nation of Israel. And guess what? It happens the same way today in the Church of God. If someone gets to the point where they do not fast on a Day of Atonement, they get cut off as a natural consequence. They cut themselves off because in doing so they forget. And I've seen that happen more times than I care to have seen it. Verse 16, on the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and on the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation for you. No manner of work shall be done on them, but that which everyone must eat, that only may be prepared. So we see here that God made the allowance for food preparation on the holy days, because it is, after all, except for the Day of Atonement, a celebration, a feast. Continuing, so you shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for in this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting covenant. Verse 18, in the first month, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. For 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses, since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a stranger or a native in the land. Verse 20, you shall eat nothing leavened in all your habitations. You shall eat unleavened bread. Now let's go over to Leviticus chapter 23 and notice that we have the same thing. We've looked at this, we've referred to this before, but now we'll read it in its entirety. Verse 4, these are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times. On the 14th day of the first month at twilight is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Very clear. The Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. Hence, you know, it's a Sabbath where we convoke. We will be here to celebrate that day. with a holy convocation, services of worship and praise to God. You shall do no customary work on it. But you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord for 7 days. The seventh day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work. Hence, the last and the seventh day of the days of unleavened bread is a holy day as well. So I think we've seen from these scriptures, and you know, if you look at the chart that I have prepared, it shows that the black columns that you see indicate night, and a white column indicates day. And what you will see, and we don't have time to get into those details, is how the Old Testament sequence of events correlates with the New Testament sequence of events. And in those columns, you've got scriptural references and notations of what occurred when. What I found remarkable, and this chart is actually a composite from the Exodus paper and also a Holy Day booklet that is now out of print. But when I first read and studied this, what I found interesting is not only is the New Testament sequence consistent with the Old Testament sequence, even the days of the week match, if we have our dating correct of the Exodus, meaning that you know it occurred on a Wednesday through Friday, Saturday. You know, you have a Wednesday crucifixion and a Saturday night resurrection. So you have consistency between the old and the new, along with even a sequencing of the days of the week, which, you know, you can say, well, that's a minor point, and in the scheme of things, it is. I mean, certainly the day on which it occurred, one could argue, is not as significant as the event itself, the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And I mean, my wife and I were talking about that on our way up, and you know, sometimes perhaps we make the error of being so focused on the days in sequence that we overlook the or don't put as much emphasis on the event itself. So we must be careful about that. But having said that, there is something very reassuring when we see that God said do something and then actually did it and did so according to how he promised it and followed through. That I think should give us a lot of faith and confidence that what he did in the Old Testament he delivered in the New precisely in the same sequence and precisely at the time when he had promised to do it. So we can take confidence from that the fall holy days that represent the culmination of God's plan and Jesus Christ's return, when that time comes, he will deliver it with the same kind of precision. And no Pharaoh, no earthly leader, no military force is going to prevent that from happening. I mean, that's instructive when you think about it. You know, Pharaoh was the most powerful man at the time, and he had the largest army, all the chariots and the horsemen. And God was able to just, I mean, first of all, get right to him personally by taking out his firstborn son and then destroying his entire military force in the Red Sea. It's not a problem. You know, the time had come for, as we read, for God to deliver on the promise that he would visit the children of Israel and bring them out of Egypt. So I hope this cursory review of the Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread refreshes your memory on the sequence and the significance of the events, and helps in our preparation for the celebratory days that we have just ahead.